Welcome to The Running Public with Bracken Crocker and Kirk DeWint. It's Tuesday, folks, and you know what that means. Training Tuesday.
We are going to take every rabbit hole, follow tangents, use useless metaphors, get lost in the weeds. This is Training Tuesday.
When you're ready to take your training or racing to the next level, go to therunningpublic.com. We have both monthly subscription training plans, $19.99 a month, and Bracken and I both offer one-on-one customized coaching. Again, go to therunningpublic.com and check out our offerings. Nope, not one sec. Good. I already hit the record button.
Important interruption. What would you guess?
Is it one of your children? Hi,
nope.
Lisa.
Not a child.
What's the occasion?
She had something very important for me to do.
I feel so bad.
No, it's okay. We just got started.
I've tried so many times.
What?
Open a half and half.
You can't open the bottle, Lisa?
It's terribly difficult.
It's one of these that it's pushing in on the...
I don't know if you can't see. My finger is so red.
Oh, my goodness.
So right now, Bracken, I don't know if we'll use this or not, but Bracken's trying to open the carton of creamer. And he can't do it either.
No, I got it.
Oh, it is opened. What a man.
Yeah, darn right.
Way to go. Proud of you. Bye, Lisa.
Lisa's first appearance on the podcast in a while.
We'll see if that stays.
She opened the door with like the saddest look. I'm so sorry, but I have to have coffee. It's already 10 a.m. and I'm going to murder the kids kind of look.
We sat here in BS for 10 minutes before recording, which is not atypical for us guys, by the way, listening. And then at the moment I decided to hit the record button, she burst in. That was good or bad timing. But I wanted to start with something that I found out this morning. And one, makes me feel a little inadequate as a coach. And two, I'm sort of like impressed / mind blown. I got a video from one of my athletes, Louisa.
Bartelos, yeah.
Yeah.
How do you say your last name?
Bartelos.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, Louisa, anyways, she is down in Brazil, and she sends me this video. It's like along the beach on like the boardwalk, like the, you know, the nice bike path along the beach. It looks beautiful. Maybe you've heard of this before, maybe you haven't. It's in Fortaleza, I think it is. Anyways, there's coaches there and run clubs in which you buy memberships to. It may just be a tent along the beach. There gels and waters and coaches. There is somebody taking photographs of you running by every day, like a personal photographer. And there was a line of a handful of these run memberships in which they got everything you need there. Bathrooms, anything that you could possibly desire for like a membership fee. So there's like a central hub where all of these coaches hang out and their athletes are members. That's their home base. And they're there for them every day as like their business model. And I saw the video of the photographers just taking pictures of runners, and then you can look them up and take them off the internet. Do you know this existed?
No.
Because my mind's kind of blown.
No, I did not know anything about this.
Well, what have we been doing? Why can't we go sit down in like downtown Minneapolis, or you can go on the lakefront in Milwaukee? That could be your business venture. That could be your million, Bracken.
It's a good idea. But I don't know if you know this about me. I don't like events looming on my calendar that I have to leave the house for.
You mean like a job that you'd have to go to, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Tell me more.
Like if you called me every Friday night and said, hey, tomorrow morning, let's head down and put a tent up and do this coaching thing by the beach, I'd be like, all right, sweet. But if we put it as a reoccurring calendar item, I would dread it every week.
Huh. What does that say about you?
I don't know. I've thought about this. Like when I left working for other people, that was the first thing that happened. As soon as I had to put reoccurring items on my calendar, they felt like handcuffs. And not like fuzzy pink handcuffs.
Hmm. Ones that hurt a little.
Uncomfortable handcuffs.
So like this standing 10:30 a.m. Monday mornings that we record our Training Tuesday, does that feel like that, or it's different because you're at home?
No, because it's in my house. I got to choose with you the time that we're doing it. Something about having the pressure to leave the house. It sounds even weird saying it, the pressure, but having something where I have to leave the house. I think the biggest part about it is that travel time stopped being a thing when I started working for myself and working from home.
Yeah.
Now, the concept of traveling on my own dime and not being compensated for that and not having anything productive happen during that time is like physically uncomfortable for me. Where anytime I do anything now, like for example, if I would have to fly out and commentate a race, I had to have, even if they were, let's say they were going to pay $2,000, I had to make it so that it was a $1,500 fee and $500 travel stipend. Even though it was the same amount of money, like I had to have it in my mind that I was being compensated for leaving the door. Otherwise, all the way to the airport, I'm like, what am I even doing here? I'm wasting 3 hours of travel this morning and two more this afternoon for nothing, and I can't be super productive. So it's just weird shift in my life where travel time kills me.
Life is hard, Bracken. It's real hard. You would hate my 33-minute drive into work and back every day. That's no traffic. That's what it takes me to get to the gym.
Although, if I get calls done during that time, I feel like I've double dipped.
Yeah, I also do that.
Like if I can manage to do that, then suddenly I feel twice as productive. But yeah, I have this, if something looms over me where I have to leave the house on a repeated basis to do something, it feels like a huge time suck on my life.
I'm sorry to hear that. Things are just nice and comfy over there inside the roof. Keep it there. I agree with you. I get it. But let's not distract from the potential business venture. This is a derailment. But she said, like in the morning at sunrise, she said hundreds of runners, multiple coaches or membership tents are available. And it's sort of like an interesting thing. Like I got to like set my stupid phone up and like run by it a few times, like after my workout's already done to like pretend I was doing my 400s. Like, let's be honest, folks, that's how it goes. Imagine just perfect HD, high quality shots of Bracken in split shorts going down the beachfront with his Gooder glasses on. Oh man, you'd be the coolest. Every run.
Does she have a side piece coach? Is that what I'm hearing? Like you're writing her programming, but someone else is handing her gels and providing her photos?
No, she was visiting family. She lives in the States. So she didn't have it. She said she had to buy her own water, she said. Unbelievable.
It's peasant stuff.
Let's move on. But I had no idea that was a thing. So the more you know, guys.
The more you know.
Do you have anything you want to wedge in there before we get going?
Well, I did I'm officially into New York City now for High Rocks. A very kind gentleman reach out and say he isn't going to be able to use his registration. So he sold his registration to me, and Lisa and I got tickets last night, so we're all in. But that kicks off a 9-week like intensive, and I started with a 3-day intensive, like more of cluster training.
Yeah,
like you would do if you went away to camp. I like kicking off this sort of thing with that. Just load a bunch of it together, get some of the bad soreness out of the way. It's not out of the way yet. As I sit here today, my calves are still kind of twinging when I move, and I took some damage this weekend, Kirk.
What'd you do?
I did a 3-day block of threshold training and heavy station work just to get through it. So 3 on, and this will be 2 days off now.
Yeah, you need these 2 days off.
Then I'll settle into my sustainable build, but getting that little mini training camp weekend out of the way of just rip the Band-Aid off. Find out exactly where I'm going to fail out. By day 2 and 3, you know where you're going to fail out in station 6, 7, 8 on race day.
Yeah, and you're coming off being sick, so you had some inconsistent bouts here in the past, so that probably smacked you pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. At least you're sitting, so you should be fine, at least for the next hour as we record.
I'm set now. Even that, trying to open up that half and half for Lisa, my forearms were just yelling at me.
The old half and half forearm pump, the classic.
Yep.
Well, I got together with Mike Ferguson this weekend. We went for a trail run at Afton, which was nice.
Really?
We got caught up. Yep. It's good. We drove an hour there together, got a 2-hour run in and an hour back. So we probably spent probably in total like 5 hours together, which was nice. And Mike, shout out. We miss you, buddy. We love you. And He said he'll record with us on the podcast only in person if all three of us are together. Those are his stipulations. He drives a hard bargain, so we'll have to wait for that day.
He does. Before we move on, and I know we got to get to the topic, but the last time I saw Mike was for a trail run. And if I remember correctly, that was his first trail run in a long time. He had stayed away because of Achilles issues he had had. So how did he handle Afton?
Great. And he's got a trail race, I think, in a few weeks himself coming up. And he's been on the trail recently. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he's just chasing like pure, true vert like we used to do, you know, like up and down ski hills and all that garbage. Mm-hmm. But all right. Should we advance to the next race distance today, Bracken? Should we do it?
Yes. This is a big jump.
Big jump. So 2 weeks ago, we split hairs on the mile, training, racing for the mile. Last week, training and racing your best 5K. And this week, which I have to imagine 90% of endurance athletes have that itch that they feel like they need to scratch at some point in their life, which is the marathon. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk out the marathon today. Maybe we'll give a little lip service to the half, but we're going to focus mostly on the marathon. Big jump from a 5K.
Yeah, and in last week's episode, I talked about, I led with, this is really going to mirror what we were doing prior. Same principles, race down to this distance, do it based off strength. If you can run double the distance, you'll be fine for this distance with a little bit of speed work. Here's where that logic breaks down. It is very, very difficult for a normal human being to race down to the marathon, certainly from an intensity standpoint and practically from a volume standpoint as well. So this is where a bit of the theory diverges, but a lot of the execution remains eerily similar.
Well, you get to the point where you have to start splitting the hairs on return on investment, like being prepared for a marathon by going out for 26-mile long runs every weekend to justify to yourself that you're capable of going out and running 26 miles sounds like, oh, that would make sense, like practice before you race. But it breaks down on the recovery front and the consistency front, the ability to stay available in training and thus progress. And so you can't over distance yourself really in something like the marathon. So how do we get prepared for 26 miles without ever really running 26 miles beforehand? Which is an interesting concept for people because most like to prove to themselves in training that they're capable. But the marathon isn't, even the best in the world aren't typically doing that.
Yeah. If you take a look back at the previous two episodes, the common theme is that we said the long run is nice, but not mandatory. Like if you can get 70 to 90 minutes in, you're set. And what that equates to is for most people, it's about 30% longer than what they're going to spend doing the 5K or the 10K. Little bit more percentage of that for a lot of people. But for this, it almost flips. I think most people can get away with doing like 25 to 30% less than race distance on their long run and just extend up to it on race day. But I want to make one clear point right from the start here. This is not how to survive your first marathon. This is not how to complete your first marathon. This is how to run your best marathon, because the training is night and day between those two, in my opinion, whether you're looking to complete or compete.
I'm glad you made that differentiator because, yeah, we're looking like we're going out there to run our absolute best. So where do we want to – do we want to piggyback off of maybe what we started last week, or do we want to just start fresh as if we got new eyes on this conversation from the beginning? Where would you like to start?
I think I'd like to piggyback, the difference.
Great. You want to kick us off?
Yeah. In my opinion, you could take a miler, a 5K athlete, and a marathoner, and you could meet every day and work out together. And the only difference you would have between those three is that the marathoner would drop the fastest work and replace it with slightly slower work. And then they would extend their long runs and their overall volume. But that for day, the structure of the week, how many quality workouts, the type of quality workouts, I think 50% of the quality could be exactly the same, and like 75% of your week could be exactly the same. There are multiple ways to train for the marathon. I'm of the camp that you train like a track athlete with long runs and more volume, and you stay away from the spiciest of work. What about yourself?
I actually like how you put that. I think half of the work is not going to look any different than if you were looking to run a hard and fast 5K. I think you need to stay in touch with that efficiency piece to make the marathon pace feel very manageable and relaxed. So you actually might do, in quotes, a little more over speed training in marathon builds than you would in a 5K. Because over speed training in a 5K is very difficult to access. We're talking VO2 max, real stuff that bites. But over speed training for a marathon may still be relatively comfortable for duration. So piggybacking what you said, I think the over speed component is more important for the marathon and can be touched more often. And when I say over speed, what I mean is running faster than goal marathon pace happens more often in training. So as you said, 50% can look very much like you want to go to the track and do mile repeats by all means. Even place for shorter intervals, sometimes with shorter rest, would have their place. Where I think the C's part for me on this, one shorter duration, high intensity quality session, as we're getting in the last, you know, nine weeks. But then the one like your threshold staple, let's call it marathon session, is going to be gigantic on paper. It may be 12 miles of quality versus a 5K athlete may do 3 to 6 miles of quality. So what we're taking is we're just stretching out one of those mainstay workouts each week into big volume coupled with intensity is where I think the C's part the most, is really extending that second session out each week. Or that'd be like your pillar session of the week. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
To keep rolling, then I second what you say, that the difference between a 5K or 10, even 10K in marathon is much more volume in between each quality session. So you're getting in maybe another 30 minutes a day on foot or more than the 5K athlete just in recovery work. And then your overall volume might be time and a half or even more than the 5K athlete as well when you look at your week. So just echoing what you said.
Yeah, and I think that this opener here would really make a lot of classic marathon coaches roll in their graves. That's not how the marathons run. And it wasn't. But now it is. With the advent of super shoes, with the pattern of athletes leaving the track for the roads very early in their career, some going straight from college to the roads, East Africans skipping track almost entirely. You have 20, 21-year-old athletes going after half marathon and marathon times and trying to make national teams. It's changed the way the marathon is run. It used to be run on the track until you don't have the knees or the speed anymore to handle that, and now let's go grind it out on the roads. And that necessitates a different style of training. But with how fast everyone's moving, I mean, we had a woman run 2:11 in a marathon this year. 2:11.
Unbelievable.
It's not that long ago where that could, if you could be a 2:11 male, you have a chance of making a podium at a major marathon. Not that long ago. 2:11, a 2:11 marathoner makes our Olympic team 3 out of every 4 years.
In the 90s, as recently as the 90s.
Yeah, the world has drastically changed. So now it is much more of a speed-based race. And again, we're talking about how to run your best, not your first or your most stable. Just boom or bust, we're trying to be as fast as possible. So what I would say is that in the 5K, if we look back to that, we were talking about you're running something threshold every week all the way through almost to the very end. And then you're going slightly faster than threshold as you build through. And that's really the only difference there. I think you're still doing that standard like we talked about, 10 to, for a marathon, or 10 to 15 by 1,000 with 60 seconds rest. That's still a marathon staple workout. 10 by 1,000 is Eliud Kipchoge's most repeated workout. You know, you're not changing that kind of work because engine is engine. And the ability to deal with and improve and buffer and shuttle lactate is still paramount, especially the faster you go in a marathon. The only difference is that the under work, like 5K paced work or mile paced work, has no real use in a marathon. And now you just move it one deviation up. So instead of threshold and slightly below, now it's threshold and slightly slower, but only slightly. And that becomes a quality long run. That's really the only difference. And then you add in legitimate long runs each week, where those guys, like we talked about in night school, Jakob Ingebrigtsen claims to have never, other than the half marathon race he ran, to have never run longer than 20 kilometers in his life. That's 12 miles. 12 and change. Now, that's the difference for a marathon. You can't get away with that. But yeah, sticking around, two quality workouts per week. One of them at or just under threshold, the other at or just above threshold. But like you said, lengthening the duration of workouts and the volume that precedes it or occurs afterwards. But there's not a ton of difference because engine is engine. The one thing that the world is getting away from is marathon-paced workouts for marathoners.
I want to break something down that you just touched on, though, really quick. As the point I wanted to make, and I was going to wait, but it's now. So you said engine is engine. Could not agree more. And then you said, well, Jakob Ingebrigtsen would not be prepared for a marathon. And I also could not agree more. Mm-hmm. You didn't say those words, but that's what you were saying. And I could not agree more. And there's one key difference between even the half marathon and the marathon. And that is your structure does not give a crap about your aerobic capabilities the back third of the marathon. No matter how aerobically conditioned you are, no matter how high your VO2 max is, and no matter how strong your heart pumps blood and big your lungs are, the roads smash your legs. The same stride over and over at race effort smashes your legs, and you will structurally, I mean, this is the marathon in an essence, but you structurally break down that back third to the point where a lot of people can't even access their abilities anymore. And so the reason for the over-duration training, and road-specific, I believe, is vital because it's so damaging in training. Like, you got to build up your resistance to impact. Otherwise, like, the marathon will win. Jakob Ingebrigtsen could prove me wrong, of course, but for us mortals out here, like, when rent comes due, holy smokes, and it comes with interest at mile 18 to 22, somewhere in there. And then you just, you're so damaged structurally that you can't run well anymore. And so that's the biggest reason why increased volume across the board is important. And then also putting those, you know, I think the trails are great for saving your legs and working laterally and stability, but this is where, like, you kind of have to step out your door and be like, all right, my big 22-mile long run happens on the bike path. Crap. But that's so important for this specific race. So I just wanted to touch on why the why isn't aerobic capability being your limiting factor, especially if you're making the transition to your first marathon. It's like, my body's physically going to break down. And so there's, like, that's the big differentiator between that and any shorter race that we have access to. Even the half, I don't think, is long enough to do that to you. So wanted to get that out there.
No, especially not at the elite level. An elite marathoner can run about an hour for a half, plus or minus. Over the course of an hour, I mean, these guys, let's take a look at Jakob. He runs 110 to 112 miles a week, every week for like 7 to 9 months out of the year. Yep. He has enough aerobic capacity and training and volume of training to handle a marathon just fine. But even if you're doubling every day, two doubles, 20K a day, does not prepare you for the pounding the way one 40K run does or one 20K run does. Two 10Ks does not equal one 20K in damage. It doesn't, which is the benefit of doubling. You get the aerobic benefit without the pounding. All right. Up until this point in the series, we haven't mentioned pounding one time. But this is where you cross that two-hour mark. Really, you cross the 90-minute mark. And pounding becomes one of your biggest issues you have to deal with. And you have to treat the pounding of a marathon the way you would treat downhills in an ultra. Where now, even though engine-wise, running downhills doesn't have the same benefit engine-wise. You still have to give specific workouts and not pay lip service to the time spent pounding downhill in order to absorb them on race day. It's the same thing with those runs longer than 90 minutes. even if they stop being as effective aerobically after about 90 minutes, the risk-reward ratio stops being in your favor. They're mandatory in order to have the resistance to impact so that you can keep doing all the things you've trained for after 90 minutes on race day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's the interesting thing. Like, let's say I went out, I think the longest I've run on the roads is like 2.5 hours, which was a long run on the roads. But whether I go and run hard for 2.5 hours, whatever that means to you, or I go run easy and it's a BS session with my buddy, my legs still feel kind of the same when it's all said and done. And that's like kind of broken, tired, no matter what. And it has nothing to do with my aerobic output. It has everything to do with just repetitive, boom, cement, cement, cement. Actually, concrete. I got corrected by Jack Bauer. He sent me a DM saying, it's bothering me that you use the word cement all the time. It's concrete. So he straightened me out on that one. So anyways, Jack, concrete. Pounding on the concrete.
It's a very Jack.
Yep.
Update to receive.
Slid right in there. And
if Jack messages me, he's either informing me on something that I may not have seen, like here's a link, here's a race, did you see this? Or he's correcting me. He's always a source of information, either positive or negative.
I believe cement is part of the concrete making progress. It might be the powder stuff, and then you mix it together to make the concrete, in which we all hate and know. So Jack gave me a paragraph lesson on this. But the point being is that whether you're aerobically putting out effort or not, the damage can still happen in the legs. At least that's how I feel on these longer runs. My legs will end up feeling a bit dull no matter the effort, and it's all to do with resistance to impact. So I'm going to toss it to you. You better turn off your mute button. There you go. Bracken was blowing his nose.
I was blowing my nose, Kirk.
So let's just give some real off-the-cuff, tangible, and then we'll break them down.
Yes.
Ideal world, you're healthy. How many miles a week are you aiming to run for the marathon?
Oh, I mean, this is that question that people just want answered for them.
Yep.
And we generally stray away from it. But if it doesn't matter, if it really doesn't matter, I'm shooting for 70 to 80 because anything less than that, and I know I'm not running enough long runs or enough daily mileage to be able to have the confidence that I'm ready to handle the marathon. Now, perfect world, yeah, I'd run 140 miles a week. I know I can't handle that. So I think that the volume you run for other events is as much volume as you can run while still hitting your quality workouts with no issues whatsoever. Yep. And for the marathon, it's as much volume as you can run without breaking down physically whatsoever, which is there's a slight difference there. And I think it's an important difference. And the difference is that for shorter races, the most important thing is that you hit your quality days perfectly. For the marathon distance, the most important thing is that you train as much as possible without breaking down at all. Even if some of your quality days suffer a little bit. Even if you bring lingering fatigue into some quality days, which you would never want to do training for a mile or a 5K. But it's kind of sports specific bringing to the marathon.
I actually agree with you. Very strongly on that in marathon, maybe I'm coaching 8 to 10 marathon builds right now. And I would say,
okay,
in the marathon build, if it's done right, you may have some heavy legs for some of these quality sessions, like that underlying fatigue, especially in that overreaching phase. But that's okay. If you downgrade your pace by 5 or 10 seconds a mile and still get the work in, a lot of times that's really purposeful, like work under duress, right? Because we're going to have to feel that the back half of the marathon regardless. But I think barrier to entry is 50 miles minimum. If you want to have a shot, and that's like 50 miles on 5 days with cross training in between, which means your days are a little bigger, 6 to 8, and then a long run, let's just say. Big quality session, big long run, small fillers. I think that's your minimum barrier to entry. And then I think to really do it right, you have to hit, I'm thinking of myself, and if I stay healthy, I may push for one this fall. I'm not going to put the cart in front of the horse. I want to make sure I can do the mileage first. I think it's got to be 60. I think I like 50 is minimum, but like 60, you can start to be a little more comfortable with what you're doing. And 70, I think, is probably what it takes when you add up the filler runs that you need on your recovery days. When you talk about bigger midweek long runs. You may be running 14 miles on a Thursday. That's not your long run. That's your midweek long run, right? And then end capping with 20 or 22. Those numbers just add up if you're really giving yourself a fighting chance. So I'm going to say 70 ideally, but if it's done very particularly and right, I think you could do it on 50 in five days. That's what I think.
Yes. And the asterisk for this is that, yes, you can do it on less. And there's a myriad of examples of people who have done it on less. And that's fine. We're not talking about could you get away with. We're talking about how to guarantee your best one, which is higher volume. That doesn't mean we even prescribe this to all of our athletes because it's not always smart to do this. In fact, there are two people I'm working with right now who their long-term goal is a marathon. And the first thing we did was reduce volume and intensity. Sure. Because they have to get to the start line.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal, is you have to get to the start line healthy. And how that happens is totally up to the individual athlete. But in a perfect world, you got to run big volume. You have to. If you can't go out every day in any condition and just walk in your sleep through an hour of work, you're not ready for a marathon. If you can't go out on any given day and run 8 to 10 miles casually with no ramifications, you're not ready for a marathon. And so that's where these numbers come from. If you have to be able to get 8 to 10 miles every time you go out, then in theory, on 7 days a week, well, you can run 56 to 70 miles casually, somewhere in there. Not even talking about long runs or quality workouts. So if you can go 56 to 70, just off going 8 to 10 a day, and someone's going to double check that math, Kirk, and it should probably be you right now so we can cut this out if I'm wrong there. But 7 times 8 should be 56.
Yeah.
7 times 10 should be 70. So 56 to 70 is that range that you should be able to get into if you want to maximize your marathon.
What do you mean by, I mean, I know what you mean by it, but I'd like you to elaborate for our listeners. If you can't handle 8 to 10 a day without like recourse, like what would be the recourse? Like what would be your sign there?
If you go out for an 8 mile easy run and it's not easy, like by 5 or 6, you're getting sore or way too fatigued. 26 is going to be a real stretch of the imagination. You'll be able to finish it. Sure. But it won't be your fastest marathon. If you can't do a quality workout and the next day go out and get an easy 10 in, you're going to fall apart on the back half of the marathon. You might make it 10, you might make it 16, might even make it 18 or 20. But at some point, the wheels are going to fall off. And once they fall off, it doesn't matter what happened up until that point. You bleed out profusely from that point on. And so there's this added durability aspect. And this is why you have camps. Like the Hanson's Brook running camp that we talked with, remind me, who did we talk with that about? Was that Charlie Lawrence?
Yeah.
About that just cumulative over fatigue work they do, where they're doing their 12 and 8 after the day after quality sessions, just to sit in that zone of fatigue all the time. And I don't subscribe to that method, but I subscribe to a version of that. A lesser version where if you can survive that training, the marathon can't do anything new to you.
Yeah, I agree. And we just have to keep reminding you listening, this is to run your best marathon, every ounce to get out of you. If you need 6 mile recovery runs after, if you need a 6 mile recovery run or a day off after a quality session in your training, that's okay. That's fine. There's probably just a little left on the table. And I would be, and truth be told, I will be in that camp if I run the marathon. I won't probably be able to run the volume needed. So I may be percentages less than I'm capable of. I'm okay with that. That's what it's going to take to get to the start line effective, probably for me. Maybe 50 miles, let's just say. Maybe 60. But anyways, so just keep, I'm just reminding you, like there's downscaled versions of this, but don't get up. Like, don't beat yourself up if you're like, well, I can't run 10 miles after a quality day. Like, that's absurd. Well, yeah, it is absurd. And so is doing the marathon, right? So, like, it falls in line. I just want to get that little.
Yeah.
Little, yeah.
Can I just echo that?
Please.
The marathon's an absurd distance.
Yeah.
I think it's a foolish race distance. And I've talked about this with people before. I think that if you really wanted the ideal long distance race distance for people to just work hard the entire time, it'd be 20 miles. I think the 20 mile race is the ultimate test of speed endurance. I think 26 is foolishness.
18 to 20.
Yeah. There's no need.
Just jump right to the ultra.
We have a the way it was chosen was so random and arbitrary. Yeah, a 50K is better for you than a marathon because at least it's on trails usually. And you can have little breaks of how your legs are working. 26 straight miles of pounding on the road, our bodies aren't designed to wear that well. We're designed to be endurance athletes. I fully believe that. We're designed to run fast and efficiently. I firmly believe that. 26.2 miles is an arbitrary distance that has no physiological correlation. You can't run it at lactate threshold. You can't run it aerobically. You have to be somewhere in between. And as such, it's this guessing game of what percentage do you err towards in order to get your best possible result there. But there's no scientific physiological marker to run it at. And that's the allure of it, right? But it also makes it a dumb distance. But since it's a dumb distance, you have to do dumb things in training to be prepared for this dumb distance.
Yeah, speaking of believing humans are endurance athletes, I do believe that wholeheartedly. Whether you're fast or slow twitch, we're still built for comfort, so to speak, not for speed. We have to do our subsistence hunt still. We got to get out. Speaking of endurance.
Yes, we do.
Yep, a subsistence hunt is going to be, yep. We need to work on our tracking skills to do that, though. Some people probably don't know what that is. That's when you chase an animal down on foot to exhaustion, and that's how you capture it and then eat it and feed your family and village. But you gotta outrun it until you are the last thing standing, and then you walk up and harvest the animal. African tribes still do it, I believe. I saw a documentary on it. Anyways, not to derail. So, The next thing then, as we're slapping these bullet points at people, long run. How long and how often do you believe the long run needs to be executed? And what should you cap it at? Where do you think you need to hit in training, distance-wise?
In reverse order, I think somewhere around 20 miles is fine. I do not think people need to run the full distance in training. I really don't. But then we have examples of people who do 30-mile long runs to prepare for it, which in a perfect world, if you can handle it, that allows you to race down to the marathon distance. And that is really nice. If you can do a 50K in training to do your over distance, great. But it's not mandatory, nor do I think it's mandatory to run your best. We have too many examples of high-level pros that won't go past 18 or 20 or 22 or whatever it is. I think it's 20 miles plus or minus 2 miles. For the individual, I would never program a marathon training block with less than an 18-mile long run or quality long run unless the athlete needed to have less than that from a structural or from a health perspective. And I wouldn't go longer than 22 unless the athlete also needed that from a mental standpoint or because they had a 50K or something like that in the books on the buildup. So yeah, 20 miles plus or minus two is my answer for how long.
If I can, I like to get people to 22. I will accept 20. I try not to do less, mostly because if we're not talking killing the marathon, that 22 is enough where it gets kind of gross towards the end. And it scares people enough to know they really need to temper their enthusiasm early and be very cognizant of their effort. So I like if we can get closer to 22, usually it scares people into submission. And the best way to run your best marathon isn't to go out super hot and die home. And so I like it only for like the teachable portion of it. But I think if you're a seasoned vet or you're dialed, I think you can get away with actually less. I have seen like our past guest Tyler German, who we've had on twice now, and we refer to him because he's a local Minnesota guy. I've seen him go 30 in training, and when he does, it's chill. Like for him, it's like 7-minute pace, which is a walk in the park. So when he does over distance, he'll go, and it's not very often. Maybe only once in a build he might do it. That's it, once, and it's chill.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think if you could get to 22, okay, and then I'm going to follow up that with how many times, like, should you do it every weekend, Bracken? Should you do it every other weekend? How many times do we need to hit, let's say, 20 plus or minus 2 miles? How many do you need to hit in your build? What do you think?
This is where we get into personal feelings more than science. Because to my knowledge, and that doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but to my knowledge, I have never tracked down a scholarly article proving or disproving the frequency of long run needed to be successful in a marathon. So we only have what people have always done. And so what they've done is historically either a weekly long run or every other week, a true long run. So this is probably the time to say it. The marathon, in my opinion, is the perfect time for a 9-day schedule. Absolutely perfect time for extending that 7-day schedule out so that you can still hit your two quality big sessions, which are going to be slightly bigger for the marathoner, plus a very long run or a quality long run every single weekly, in quotes, cycle. However, the vast majority of marathoners have a normal life and can't do 9 week. So then what I like to do is I alternate. One weekend, it's a true long run. The other week, it's a quality long run. And then there'll be some sort of medium long run following up on one of the quality sessions. So I always hedge my bets in everything I do, as everyone on here knows. And that's the way I do it, is I alternate weekends.
I don't think it should be every weekend. I think there's still a component of like the best ability is availability, as you say. And when you're on the road so much, which you need to be to run your best marathon, like if you went out and did 20 miles every weekend, you're just starting to tilt the odds in the favor of some sort of overuse injury. And so maybe going 22 one weekend and then only in quotes going 15 the next, but there's threshold intervals in there. It's kind of like best of both worlds, right? You're still getting some duration, but you're cutting it just a little shorter.
Yep.
And so I think just even to run your best, if you're like the healthiest guy or girl in the world, I think every other week is still the right call. And I don't know necessarily like what the top end pros do. Like, I don't know if Connor Mance and Clayton Young go out for 20 every weekend or what script they're following. I should look at that, but that's my philosophy too. Backing you up there.
Yeah. It's just, I look at long runs a lot like I look at VO2 max or faster interval work, where if you do a few of them in a row, you get better at them very quickly and they build a ton of confidence, but they erode you. The longer you spend consistently doing them, the less you get back and the more they take from you.
Yep.
So even they're on polar opposites of the intensity scale, I believe they provide the same type of physiological stimulus in terms of getting you better at the task of doing it and then breaking you down for doing it. And so I don't like to do it too often. If I'm building my perfect marathon, and someday I will run a marathon, Kirk, because as a coach and as a runner and as a fan of running, I have to have a marathon build and execution on my resume at some point. I just have to do it. You have to run a marathon if you love running as much as you and I do. At some point, it just calls to you. But I will not be an every week long run athlete. I will be an every other week.
Well, and then touching, I was going to follow this up, and you sort of opened the door on this part of the conversation, is how many, meaning like in your build, let's say your goal is to build up to 22. I want to do a 22 mile long run. Like, is one enough? Do you go 18 and then 2 weeks later, 20, and then 2 weeks later, 22 one time, and then you taper in, or do you hit 22 every other week for 3 cycles? You know, what's your philosophy on that? And that's the return on investment thing, right? Are you going to wear yourself out in the process? And by the time you could end up flat or not. So go ahead.
Well, this is why I alternate long run distances. The idea of building up 16, 18, 20, 22, and now I taper, is that it ends up, you kind of sharpen mentally and you put the 22 on a pedestal. And oftentimes that is the workout we can identify on athletes' timeline as, here's where we left our race, right here in this last big workout for the marathon. I am not a believer in a last big workout for a marathoner, even though I am for other distances. And I think it's because, not I think, I know it's because it's too easy to leave your race there. I think it's the single most common issue other than not showing up healthy is leaving your race in your last big workout. There are too many examples of this happening, and so I don't do that. If I am going to have someone run 22, I want them to run it twice. And I want it to be spaced at least 4 weeks apart so that they don't put any undue emphasis on either one of those. And we word it that way. The first one's a freebie. You're just going to go out there and feel what could go wrong. Get it under your belt. And the second one, you're going to try to do it better. But better doesn't mean faster. It means easier. You're going to try to get it done with less damage. And our last key workouts are going to still be our interval sessions that are only going to be, in quotes, 12 to 16 total miles of work. Because I am just really, really hesitant to be involved in someone leaving their race in training. I would rather have you show up feeling like, I know I ran the distance, but I didn't crank on it, and there's still some mystery on race day, than, oh, I crushed that workout, but was that it?
Yeah, I think 22, let's just say that's our number. I think twice as well is actually exactly correct. And maybe that last one is, I like 3 weeks out. And then the following week, you give them a softball, which will be like 18, which will feel like a softball compared to 22. And then 2 weeks out, you're shorter with quality. And then you race, and suddenly you're like, God, I haven't run that far in that long. And you get to the start line being like, yeah, I know I did that distance in training, but now I feel like it was so long ago. Like, am I still able? Like, did I lose anything? No, you're right where you should be. Available.
Or am I better?
Right. So I actually think that's perfect. And you don't want to... I really don't think you want to go like every other week, like a 20-mile long run for like months on end. You want to build to it. You want to sit in it for maybe a 4 to 6 week window-ish, and then you want to taper right down in. So oftentimes with the marathoners that I coach, actually, like my marathon's in 6 months. They're ahead of it. They're hiring me in time for it. And then I send them their first plan. They're like, why am I only going 12 or 14 miles on my long runs this month, or why? Like, I thought I needed more volume. And the answer is you do. But I'm telling you, if I start sending you for 20 mile long runs out of the gate, you're going to get to the marathon day flat as a pancake. And we just, it's not the right approach. Yep. So building to like an overreaching phase, sitting in it for 4 to 6 weeks, and then tapering in. You can't get gung ho 6 months out. Really, you can't. And you watch the top end pros too, and they'll do the exact same thing. When it gets to critical time frame, everything's ramped right up. They jump up another notch, they sit in it, and then they taper in. But it's not like a 6 months of this thing. It's good, consistent work, gradually building up, combining intensity with duration for that overreaching phase, let's say 4 to 6 weeks out, and then sort of, what is it, softly landing the plane in, or whatever analogy somebody used recently, whether that was you or yep. I don't know where I heard that. That would be, I know I'm getting like too big picture now,
but I don't think. But
that's
like
how
it.
That's how I look at it.
Yeah, if someone comes to me 6 months out, which oftentimes happens because people get rightfully worried about being ready for the marathon, so they start 6 months out, then my standard answer is, all right, we're going to do two builds. We're going to do like this B to B plus build. And we're going to test out how I would train you for a marathon combined with what you know about yourself. And then we're going to get to the end of something, and then you might run a half, or you might run a trail race, or maybe we just do a simulator, like a workout week one, a workout on the end of month three, and then we see how we've progressed, and then we rebuild, take a little bit of downtime, and rebuild properly for the second attempt. But I do not do a 6 month straight build. It's just too much can go wrong.
I like that. And it's interesting because the people, when they hire you, they're very motivated to come out of the gates firing.
Very.
Yeah, which is great. I love that. I've had to defend my programming. I'm going to say I can't count it on both hands at this point. Why we're holding back a little bit early on, even though you're capable. So I agree with that. You bring up something I wanted to touch on too, which is racing beforehand. I think that's a big topic of conversation. I'm going to run a marathon. What race should I run beforehand? And when should that be? I know we're not kind of throwing things at the wall now, but we might as well touch on it. Do you have any thoughts on that? I have some thoughts on it, of course. What is that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think we're on the same page with this at this point, but my tune-up race is never a half marathon.
Nope.
I think it is the worst thing you can do mentally for yourself is anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks out, run a half, because all it's going to do is depress you. And we've talked about it on here before, but it's really difficult to run close to marathon pace, which half marathon pace is usually kind of close to marathon pace. It's close enough that it makes it hard to imagine ever holding slightly slower than that for double the distance, because halves hurt a lot, but they're not significantly faster than your marathon pace. And so it just sets you up to erode your confidence.
5K, 10K, 10K would be great. You could even convince me of a 10 mile, 10K's maybe, great. maybe a 10 mile, maybe. I could see an argument for that, but you're exactly right. It's too close in pacing. And we do want to do everything in our power to make marathon pacing feel comfortable. And if you're scared of that by running a half beforehand, I just think you go run, you know, a 10K 4 weeks out or something on one of the weekends. You don't have a true long run. And the intensity is going to be so much more heightened than you're going to feel the first 8 to 10 miles of your marathon, that the perspective is sort of everything, and the downshift in pacing is everything. And I think those are key components to racing beforehand. And I have a few that are running halves in the build, and I think it's, you know, more of a confidence thing. I don't know if they're looking to feel out marathon pacing. It's okay, fine, but I don't think it's the right route to run your fastest.
Nope.
Yeah. And should you, like, how far out would you like one of those races in your build? Do you have any preference there?
Doesn't matter to me. I think marathons are the least, marathons and ultras are the least important to do real races leading up to, because you don't have to feel a sting. You don't have to feel tactics. What you have to feel is appropriate respect for the distance and pacing. And you can get all of that through training. So I don't think you have to race at all. What I do think is most important is doing a race to get the race experience. Got to wake up early. I've got to test out my pre-race breakfast. I have to put on my kit. I have to test my socks and shoes over a race distance. I have to reestablish how the Port-a-John situation is going to work for me before a race. Getting the kind of like the paperwork of a race done, the logistics, go through that. I think that's very important to people, because a marathon is a competition of not exerting too much, and mental strain on race day is every bit as destructive as physical strain. So just going through the race day stress is very important. But that's where I would send them to a 10K, or if they want to do a half, I just did this with someone. Sure, let's run a half, but we're going to run it on the trail.
Yep.
You get to do all the race day stuff, but you don't get to get destroyed mentally. You don't have to play mind games about pace, because pace is out the window. So you can go work hard for a half marathon, which is beneficial, but you don't have to compare it. No comparisons get to be made.
Yeah, I like that. It has less to do with like racing for an hour to 2 hours being the concern, as much as like the mental game you play with the pacing and then projecting to your marathon, right? All of that. Yeah. If I take a step back, so just to like outline, at least this is my belief, I think you'll probably nod your head to most of this. If I'm going to lay out like a 7-day normal schedule, okay, a 9-day, you're right, you can make a really good argument for a 9-day. In an ideal world, what you'll end up seeing is Tuesday, let's just a traditional Monday through Sunday schedule. Tuesday is going to be your big highlight point of the week. That's actually going to be your, you may do 9 miles, you may do 3x3 mile repeats, you know, at marathon pace or faster, for example. You might, it's going to be your biggest session quality wise on Tuesday. You'll recover, you know, recovery run Monday, Wednesday. Thursday will be a midweek long run of just a little longer, right, than your typical recovery effort. And then Friday, what I would typically recommend is this is your sort of over speed day now. So Friday, it won't be as much volume, but maybe you are hitting mile repeats or you're doing whatever it might be, but shorter, quicker than marathon pace. And then you'll run a nice, what you call like easy long run the following Saturday. Let's say that's your 20 miler. The following week, as Bracken alluded to, you're going to run the same script. You're going to run your big highlight thresholdy marathon workout Tuesday. But this week, you're not going to do a quality session on Friday. You'll just do another recovery run, but then you'll mix your quality into your shorter long run on Sunday or Saturday. So you have two, what in quotes, quality every week. One is mixed into your long run, which is a shorter duration, and then the next week it's a standalone, and then you run your long run fatigued from speed work the day before. So if it's really a two-week cycle is what I would look at in an ideal. This is my opinion. You can pick holes in it, of course. There's other ways to do it. But and you'll see a lot of even the pros I watch. You know, I follow what like Tyler Germain does, again, bringing him up on Strava. And I look up to the way he trains. He has brought some new workouts into my life. Similar script those guys are running at Minnesota Distance Elite. And they have some very good runners. I mean, one of their women, Dakota Lindworm, just qualified for the Olympics. She's at Minnesota Distance Elite. And they're running the same script. That is the script that the best marathoners, at least locally, are running. So I thought, you know, and I prescribe that and I believe in that sort of general layout. What would you pick apart in that, or what would you add?
I think that's the everyman's best script.
Yeah.
two quality sessions, one long run. Every other week, the long run is a quality session. And on that week, you either go easy long the next day or you do a midweek long run. That's the only pivot I would ever make is I alternate depending on the athlete or the time of the block or their needs, whether they're doing midweek long runs like Tuesday quality, Thursday medium long, Saturday long quality.
Yep.
Or if they're doing Tuesday, Saturday with Sunday medium long. It doesn't really matter. It's just dependent on what that athlete needs are. But yeah, that's the everyman's elite level training. Anything more intense than that is no longer how to run your best marathon with any sort of guarantee. You either need elite level talent, elite level recovery ability, or elite level coaching and facilities behind you. I think what you just outlined is exactly how I would do it. But the quality, I'm going to double down on what we did for 10K. It centers around threshold work, slightly above and slightly below. I do not do very much marathon pace work other than simulation workouts, test workouts, fitness checks. Other than that, it's all faster than marathon pace.
Yep, I agree with you. And I will say, because I'm just thinking a couple athletes that I have programs written that aren't on this script, but they're running a marathon. So they're probably like scratching their heads like, why? That's not what I have. And the reason for that is you actually really need to earn your way into this program. Like if you haven't really tackled a marathon before, you're still relatively new, the volume itself is going to be enough of a stressor. So running two quality sessions every week actually is not the right call for most people. Even if you're looking to run your best right now, it may be a Tuesday quality and a Saturday long run. And then the next week might be a Tuesday quality and a Saturday quality long run. You might only get three quality sessions in 2 weeks because the extra volume, we need to be careful there. And so just know, like, if you're like, I'm going to run my first marathon, and then you're like, okay, two quality sessions a week and a fatigue long run and all this, it is a solid recipe to find yourself with something going wrong. And so this is more like the next, like your second or third crack at it. If you've proven that you can stay healthy, this isn't like, hey, this is my first crack. Yes. I want to hit it. I don't know if I would suggest that for your first timer. You know what I'm getting at here? You need to earn your right into that training script. That's my PSA on it.
Yeah. Yeah. In the build up to this, getting the first one done, either the medium long run or the second quality work is replaced by some sort of leg builder or muscular endurance workout for me. Building up the stability and the power to be able to handle structurally the marathon. The earlier you are in the training cycle, the more emphasis I'm putting on, we're going to get the miles in and we're going to make sure you can handle your long runs and your daily volume. And whatever intensity we can place upon that is what we place upon that. And if we have to put that intensity on the assault bike or the rower, that's fine because I want to hit your 60 miles. I want to get your 6 miles every day, Monday through Friday, and a long run on the weekend. And if we have to get our engine work somewhere else, great, because we are surviving and finishing the marathon. This is now post-secondary education. This is where you go off to college and you run your best. That's what we're talking about today.
Yep. Yeah. And what you're outlining, if it is your first, like getting to the start line, like durable, is way more important than getting there super sharp, like proving that you can get the long runs done and you can spend the time on foot. So, all right. So we're getting to the end here. Any favorite marathon workouts? Like any of the flash? Anything you really enjoy prescribing? Or
I think the marathon is not built on a workout. I think the marathon is built on stringing 20 workouts together. And so I know this is a bad slot, like lazy answer. People want that one marathon workout to rule them all, but I think it's the threshold work that you can string together over the course of 12 to 20 weeks is your best workout. So like for me, I'm going to be sticking to 3 and 5 minute threshold intervals on Tuesdays. And the difference I'll make is instead of extending up to 6 or 8 minutes, I'll be living between 9 and 20 minute threshold intervals on my Fridays. I'm just extending those out, but I'm choosing the intensity because you have a range you can work in there and duration that I could repeat on repeat for 3 months. That's the best marathon workout, is the one that accumulates over the course of your entire build and never leaves you fully cooked or remotely injured. But if I had to choose just one, I love 3 by 15 or 20 minutes. I also love some version of that 20-15-10-5 or 15-10-10-5 or your in and out workouts, mile on, half off, or 1,000 on, 800 off. Those in and outs, they're great workouts, but none of them matter if you can't string 10 to 20 of them together.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, the marathon's built brick by brick, right? That's how the house is eventually comes to together at the end. So I agree with you there. People still want the workouts. That's the thing.
Because if you had said, Bracken, you have 3 weeks to PR a mile, what workouts are you going to choose? I would pore over all the workouts available and I would choose the workouts that would absolutely do the most for me. If you said you had 3 weeks to get ready for a marathon, I would just run medium long every other day.
Yeah, yeah.
And do like one long threshold workout and that's it. Like there's not much you can do in 3 weeks. So like no one workout matters. You just need all of them over the course of 3 months.
Yeah. Well, I like the float style where you're never giving yourself true rest. I've been playing around with that a good bit. I've done a number of different variations of it now, including uphill variations, which the word float shouldn't be used in uphill workouts, I've decided, but I still say it. There's no floating. I did 3-3 float this Friday, and I was like, this is stupid, but I floated, supposedly. The float style where you're just never really backing off the gas. Maybe your heart is 20 seconds a mile faster than marathon pace, and your float is 20 seconds a mile slower. And it averages marathon pace, but you're over and undering it, right? Like you mentioned, the over-unders. Mm-hmm. Trying to extend out to 60 minutes of it. You may want to do 60 minutes of Bilat 60-60. 60 surge, 60 float. And you might do, but you extend it out to like an hour, like 30 reps of it. You see a lot of these guys going 75, 80 minutes of that stuff. So the float style, look into like an hour of work. What is that going to take? Cool. The 3 by 3 miles. Is it, I just had a marathoner run 4 by 2 miles, you know, very specific. I mean, that's even a little under on the volume side, but like those longer things, like I haven't said quarters, I haven't said anything else. The whole stand and true rest recovery in the marathon, pretty much out the window, guys. Like, we're not running unless it's like really long extended threshold, like millions of reps. Like most of our recovery now in quotes is like we're running our recoveries. We're never allowing ourselves to fully charge up because that's not how the marathon feels, nor it is. There's exception, your over speed days and all that. But think like you may do a mile, mile repeats with 90 seconds jog recovery. And that jog recovery is still like not like jog recovery. You're running like recovery pace on your recovery day pace. So anyway, so a lot of that stuff going in and out of it, but we're preaching the same thing, longer intervals, high volume of those intervals. And then your overspeed days could be a mix of anything. It may be beneficial for you to go and run quarter mile repeats with 90 seconds rest to just keep the turnover. I don't even hate that as long as it's in conjunction with that threshold work and the longer stuff. That was a lot, but did that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, and the slower twitch athlete, the more you're an endurance monster, the more you should probably go run some 2s and 4s every other week.
Yeah.
Someone like me, I've got to live in threshold the entire time, convert as many muscle fibers into endurance fibers as possible. That's what I got to do. And I'm probably breaking it into stages where I'm doing standing rest for like the first month of training. And then the second month of training, I'm doing standing rest on Tuesdays and not on Fridays. And then the final month, I'm floating in and out of everything.
Yep.
But either way, like you have to just be marathon specific. Have to.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? I mean, we could get so detailed. We could talk about what should my heart rate be on my long run? Can I run too hard or fast? Where like we could get all that. We're not gonna. You can hire us if that's where you're at. Just give us.
That's
just,
right.
Just hire us. Anything else that we missed? What do you think? We got to add anything? Did we confuse them good? Gave them enough information to just like stir the pot a little bit, kick the beehive, and then leave them be?
We didn't talk shoes or fueling at all. And that's because this is about the training plan, not the execution. So maybe there's an entire whole other day about getting the most out of energy stores and return on your energy.
I went through, there's a series on YouTube outlining whenever they started video recording the marathon, the Olympic marathon. And who is it? It was like, what was it, the 50? Maybe it was the 50s? Like the barefoot marathon, the guy that won ran in no shoes on the concrete.
A BB Bekele or something. A BB Bekele.
it wasn't that, it was like 63 or something. It wasn't that long ago. It was like guys had shoes. Like there was some technology. No. And he won, didn't he? In like two, who knows, 14 and barefoot. The heck? I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah, he was destroyed afterwards.
Unbelievable. I would recommend if you're out of content, you can get on like, I don't know what page it is, and I don't know if you've watched it, but it'll walk you through like a 10-minute video of the marathon, like the summations all the way up. And it's kind of like a good history lesson, and it's fun to watch the approach.
Hmm. I didn't watch that. I've watched the progression of the mile world record or 1500
by Runner Boy.
That was a fun one to watch.
I think he's got him out there.
I don't know. This was a while ago.
Yeah. He's done most of the Runner Boy, BOI, I think. He's done most of the distances now, like mile, 5K, marathon. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
All right. It's been a pleasure.
It has been. And for everyone listening, please understand that all your confusion is warranted. This is the least buttoned down distance. The pros are still changing their style almost every camp. Cam Levins, who is the Canadian national record holder, just switched up his training style last year. He's a pro athlete. He switched his training style up last year. This happens all the time. People jump camps in the marathon as much as any other distance out there because there's always something different to try, and it takes so long to prove or disprove a training block. So if you're listening to this going, I just don't know how that could work for me, that's okay. That is very much okay. This is a distance that is 50% science and 50% intuition and guesswork.
Yeah.
And that's part of the allure of this marathon.
I think you put a bow tie on that nicely. Now people have a nice comfy pillow to sleep on if they're scratching their head saying, I'm not doing anything close to that. It's okay. It's okay. Nope. We love you. All right. It's time to end this thing. See you later, Bracken.
See ya. If anything resonated with you on today's episode and you're curious about taking your training to the next level, check out therunningpublic.com, where we have a training plan to fit your needs.